Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I am your host, Nate Lindberg, and I'm sorry, I wasn't sure if we were actually on the air or not. So let me try that again. Welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT hits and misses, as well as the SmackDown Alt Perspective reports alongside Wade Keller's report each Friday. So check that out when they go up. Tonight, we had a main event, and that was fleshed out during the opening segment of the show. And before actually I even get in there, if you want to be a part of this show, please email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, or call us at 515-605-9345. Press 1, and you guys can be a part of the show. Talk with us and let us know what you thought and all of that good fun stuff. So we had a main event, and that was fleshed out during the opening segment of the show. The Irish champion, Finn Balor, made his way to the ring on this St. Patrick's Day, and he said that he's beaten all challengers, and only Karrion Kross is left on the list of people that he needed to defeat. Kross and Scarlett made their way to the ring, and tag team champions, Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan, made their way to the ring. Shortly thereafter that, after some words were said back and forth between Balor and Kross, the tag team champion said that Pete Dunne's the only one that should be challenging for the NXT title. And then Scarlett ended up challenging the NXT tag team champions to a match against Finn Balor and the and Karrion Kross. And for some reason, that match was made official. That match turned into the main event. And this main event itself, it was a relatively predictable main event as far as I'm concerned, with Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan retaining their titles. Some shenanigans went down towards the end of the match where Scarlett was knocked down when Finn Balor was basically, I think he was trying to take out Oney Lorcan, if memory serves, and Oney was accidentally knocked into Scarlett. Scarlett got knocked down. Karrion Kross, seeing Scarlett get knocked down and all that, caused him to attack his partner, Finn Balor, and ended up costing them the match. So that's what happened with the main event. That was 11 minutes and 1 second of wrestling there. And before I go over to my co-host here, I'm going to switch over and go to an email from our good buddy, JB. JB says, "Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Who do you think has a better chance of getting called up after WrestleMania, Karrion Kross or Finn Balor? Personally, I think Balor has done all that he can on his second tour of NXT, and I think that this change in personality with the new Prince character would feel fresh again on Raw or SmackDown. Meanwhile, I think Kross would be exposed a little bit on Raw or SmackDown with the lack of his size and seemingly over-reliance on his entrance. Love the show and look forward to your thoughts." All right, that was, like I said, from JB. So on the main event as well as the email, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Here's a little preview of how most of this is going to go. Usually when somebody dives out of the ring and the commentators ask, "Can they get back in it?" I groan as we cut to commercial break. But yep, for tonight's show, every time the commercials ended and we had to keep watching more NXT, I groaned and just thought, like, just play Scoop, There It Is Again, or something. Oh, man, not more of this. But here we are, and we have two characters in Finn Balor and Karrion Kross that NXT has done a miserable job of investing me in. I feel nothing for either of these characters. So it really does just come down to JB's question of what do you think they're going to do? What is the business move for who goes where or who gets to be the champion or who's positioned as champion? Who do they want to market more in that role? Who do they want to build around? That's the only interest that I have in any of this. And I can't imagine that I'm too alone in that. So when these two guys go out there and they're sticking their chins into each other and jawing back and forth with scripted barbs, it really does nothing for me. And then you've got Karrion Kross explaining that the reason he took so long to get to Balor was that he wanted to make sure that they settled their separate affairs first, so there was nothing else that was going to interfere. I'm like, well, Kross, you had nothing else going on. You were the one who meddled in in Priest's business, and you could have easily looked beyond Escobar when he mentioned your name. You know, so, you know, he's obviously that's just how he was booked for a little while there, but explanation does not ring true. And then I'm thinking, like, wait, isn't there, you know, I mean, Balor beat Dunn, but it doesn't feel like they're totally dissociated from this. Yes, I would like to believe that Dunn is going to be doing a squash match thing for a little while, but this is modern NXT, so that's probably not going to happen. And sure enough, right away, Lorcan and Burch come out. And, of course, as we'll see segment to segment here, this is another episode of NXT that is riddled by yet another COVID outbreak. And this feels like a match that was probably, you know, a replacement for what they had planned, because it makes no sense. And Scarlett, you know, I don't mind her doing her smoke show stuff. She's good at that. And I think there's a place for that, especially when it's not the norm for women in the company anymore. But she does her smoke show stuff to convince the tag champs to put their titles on the line. And I'm just like, I don't know why she would do that. I guess this is just a way to sucker Balor in, which Balor seems like he should be smarter than that, but maybe he knows that he's smarter than that, so he's going to try to be ready for it. Let's see what they do in the main event. And then I know that the main event's finish might have had to be retooled on the fly a little bit. I mean, couldn't have been too significant, but a little bit, since Burch took a bad landing and had to sit out the rest of the match while he got looked at. It doesn't appear to be, from what they showed us on TV, it doesn't appear to be too serious, but, you know, just a precaution to not let him finish, but you know, we'll wait for the report on that. So then, like you mentioned, they do the whole, like, Balor accidentally kicks Lorcan into Scarlet thing, which is so ridiculously typical, and at the same time, it shows that Scarlet and Cross were not going to sucker Balor in. They were trying to win the tag championships, which makes zero sense whatsoever. So it's just very, very strange all around. I think I'm going to go against logic here and say that I don't know. This is just this one week, and I know I've been saying, like, oh, they should go back to Cross for a while, and a lot of that is just that I thought there might be some potential with Cross at the top, and I also just, you know, find Balor to be ridiculously boring. But I almost kind of in this circumstance, I think what I would want is to see Balor's reign legitimized. I mean, they've already done that, but legitimized to the extent of him going over Cross and maybe like a handshake deal, which doesn't feel like it's in Cross's language, but still something that shows like, hey, you know, yeah, we sort of had to move to switch to Balor as an audible. That wasn't the plan, but they're telling the audience, like, you know, we're okay with how the plan panned out. This wasn't just a holding pattern until we got Cross back. And contrary to what JB is saying in the email, I would say that, you know, and I've mentioned this before, that work in the ring work is much more important in NXT than it is on the main roster. The quality of someone's wrestling does not a call-up make. And so Cross, even though he's been unfortunately positioned against other people who like Denzel Desjardins, who Desmond Troy, I think his new name is, you know, who rival him in height. And so he doesn't look like the beast that we presume they are trying to show him off to be. I think just being an entrance and then doing Saito's on the main roster will be more than enough. I mean, look at what they've been able to do with Braun Strowman, for better and for worse. You know, for better against Roman and for worse with pretty much everything else Braun has done. But still, that's a main roster act. You wouldn't want to see Braun Strowman on NXT, where ring work is more important. So of that workout, for as much as I'm pretty sure I've said over and over again that Cross should just go up and kick Balor's ass, mostly just because I don't care for Balor, but yeah.
Yeah. So would you be looking for a cross victory at TakeOver, or looking for a battle?
Yeah, I'm thinking if if Balor wins, I mean, yeah, he says he's gone through everybody already. But you know what? Screw it. Like, just have LA Knight beat Bronson Reed for whatever reason, and it'll be confusing in the moment because we thought that Bronson Reed was ascending, but then LA Knight goes on to challenge Finn Balor and becomes the champion, and we're like, what world are we living in? But okay, I don't know. But it just seems like in JB's scenario where one of them goes up after WrestleMania, I think Cross is the one that makes more sense. But it's also a toss up. I'm trying to rationalize a point of view that I am seeing tonight, whereas if you asked me tomorrow, I could argue the other side just as easily.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear you there. There's a lot to process tonight. A bit of an interesting show, but you know, I'm in agreement with you for the most part on just about everything here. The build during the opening segment was strange. Like, why would Scarlett try to make these guys tag champs? What makes her think that they could actually work together, considering the fact that they're, you know, rivals about to face each other for the NXT championship, all of that. I mean, we've seen it before. We've definitely seen it before where, you know, you've got two rivals going, you know, up against tag team champions. And I think even a couple times in, you know, WWE history, we've actually seen them pull the trigger on a tag team run, a tag team title run with mismatched champions. I'm blanking on an example, but I know it's happened. So, you know, it's something that we've seen quite a bit, but yeah, it didn't really make any sense. Why would only Lorcan and Danny Burch accept that match and this, that, the other thing? Then once we actually got to the match proper, tag team champions didn't even get an entrance. They were already in the ring. And, you know, that's something NXT's been doing. They've only been giving, you know, one side of the match an entrance here and there, I guess just to cut down on time or whatever. But, like, as a seasoned wrestling fan, I've been trained to think if you don't get an entrance, you don't matter. So it was, you know, clearly they do matter. They won. They're the champions. But it was just an odd message to send. You know, it was a small nitpick, but just an odd message regardless. But, yeah, as far as JB's questions, like who might go up, I'm in agreement with you. I think if one of the two is going up, if in that scenario, I think it probably would end up being Cross. We've talked about it for a while. I think that is more of a main roster act. I think I even said that when he debuted, that it seemed like a much more of a main roster act than an NXT act. You know, it just kind of seems like that's kind of where he's been destined to go. If he sticks around in NXT, I think I'd be surprised. Finn Balor, I think he's enjoying being in NXT. From what I've heard, I mean, granted, you know, it's been WWE produced stuff, so you never really know. But from what I've heard and what I've read and everything, it's, you know, he's happier down in NXT. He's got that edge back that he kind of didn't have necessarily up on the main roster. And I think, you know, that's kind of both storyline and real life. So I could see him sticking around in NXT, or at least wanting to stick around in NXT, where I feel like Karrion Kross, the actual person, even though it's probably not his decision, but, you know, I'm sure he would probably rather go to the main roster than stay down in NXT. But that's at least just my speculation and spitballing. Okay, so that was the main event. So with that, I think we will head over to the phones. Where did I put my tab that has the phone line? That's a good question. Hey, there it is. Found it. Found my tab. Okay, so with that, we'll go to the phones, and we'll bring on our buddy Darrell. Darrell, what's going on tonight, man? And happy St. Patrick's Day.
How you got? Happy St. Patrick's Day, and how you guys doing tonight?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. What you got for us?
That horrible opening segment with the baffling talking really set the mood off right on today's show. So I'm going to try to go a little different and talk about a surprise return on NXT with Walter coming out there at the end and setting up maybe the match that I think we were talking about a couple weeks ago, maybe Walter versus Ciampa, which I would love to see. How do you guys like that? I know that it was supposed to be a tag team match, and I guess Timothy maybe might be one of the people who had to sit out because of the COVID outbreak or whatever. But that could be a match that I would love to see. Plus, on NXT UK tomorrow, they had that Walter had an announcement that he had to make. So wonder, will that be something where they have the NXT UK champion defend his title on the two-night takeover to, you know, just to lift up that card a little bit? What do you guys think about all that, and how you like about him and his surprise return?
So I think we've been expecting Walter to show up for a little bit now. I wouldn't say surprised, but I was definitely happy to see him. The match eventually we're going to see versus Ciampa, I think, is going to be should certainly be a fun one. You know, we've talked about in the past, Ciampa's kind of hit that like superstar, that S tier, and he may not seem nearly as big of a star as he did, you know, a year and a half ago during the height of his like, you know, run, you know, NXT title run. He certainly cooled off a bit, but I know at least for me anyway, he still has that that main event feel to it. You're kind of bigger than the title, at least I said for me. So I think this is cool. You've seen him going up against Walter. Whether or not they have, if it's going to be Ciampa versus Walter at TakeOver, or one of the two nights TakeOver, or if, you know, like you said, tomorrow on NXT UK, he's got an announcement, whether or not he challenges somebody else, I'm not sure. But I would love to see the UK title defended on, at Stand and Deliver. There obviously hasn't been a whole lot going on with the NXT UK scene. Obviously they're back now and they're doing TVs and everything, but for the majority of the past year, they've been kind of dead. So I think it'd be kind of cool to take those titles, put them on, as long as there's a spot for them, you know, during those two nights, you at least take the NXT UK title, maybe the women's title or something, throw it on there, give them a little bit of a highlight to draw eyes to that product. Sure, I'm all for it. Before I throw over to Tom, I'm going to talk quickly about this segment here, which we had a couple different segments. So we had Tommaso Ciampa being interviewed backstage by Mackenzie Mitchell, basically talking about Timothy Thatcher getting injured, which we didn't actually really see. So I'm wondering if it, or at least not that I remember anyway. So I'm wondering if maybe he is part of the COVID outbreak or something like that. Again, pure speculation, but just, you know, from what we saw tonight. He was interviewed by Mackenzie Mitchell. Then he essentially led into a match Martel Barthel from Imperium. We had Ciampa go over in 4:28. And then afterwards, Walter came out, and it looks like we're, you know, probably setting up for something like that. So, with all of that, Tom, what do you think about the match, the segment, and what Darrell has to say?
Yeah, well, Timothy Thatcher keeps his private life very private, so who knows? But he was conspicuously absent, and I sure hope he hasn't been hanging around with Drake Wirtz for multiple reasons. The match felt like a filler match after they had to turn it into a singles match. And with that in mind, it's just sort of like, okay, I know TakeOver's right around the corner, but wouldn't you want to bring Walter out after a bigger moment in the ring or for a bigger moment in the ring and not at just like the hour and a half mark on a show, because this should have felt bigger. But that said, it's still Walter, and he feels significant with everything he does because his performances always. And so tonight I think was a dud of a return, but it's still very interesting to think of where we could go. And I love, I think Darrell said the idea would be to put the UK title on the line against Ciampa at TakeOver. And I really like that idea because not only would the match, of course, be great, but you've got the intrigue of whose corner or which side is Thatcher going to be on. And it reminds me of I'm probably going to botch this, but I think it was SummerSlam 92, and it was an issue between, was it Flair and Savage, and we weren't sure whose corner Mr. Perfect was going to be in. Something along those lines. It might have even been, I think Ultimate Warrior was involved somewhere. I'm sure I'm mixing this up. It might have been Savage Warrior, but I also, in my memory, don't remember. Whatever. That's a whole other branch that I won't travel down right
now. Hey, according to the match card, it was Warrior Savage.
See, that's the match that I'm remembering, and then I'm confusing myself by maybe they were building to Savage Flair and the – well, whatever. Other people remember it better, and I definitely remember that match and how Warrior hit like a zillion elbow drops on Savage, but I also remember the Mr. Perfect intrigue. But anyway, it was intrigue, and that's what it would be here, if not at the exact same level. But yeah, I guess I thought I had more to say on it, but I don't really have anything else in my notes other than the name Fatty Arbuckle, because even though this sounds like an insult, I don't mean it that way. When Walter came out tonight, I was like, well, I don't know why I haven't realized it before, but he looks like Fatty Arbuckle.
I'm not 100% sure that who that is, but I'll take your word for it. I'll take your word for it. And one thing that I wanted to ask you too is tonight the first time that they actually mentioned RingComp on TV?
I think it is. And I'm glad you brought it up because I noticed that and I liked it, because even though up until this point, it feels like one of those things that they didn't have to mention because fans who care about that kind of thing already know about it, and we can insert it into the storyline ourselves. It's nice to hear the commentary mention it and just be like, yeah, we're not pretending that we're in our own little world. And it makes the storyline feel more real and more believable. It's honestly, obviously, a very different situation, but it's honestly akin to AEW saying COVID and saying coronavirus on commentary and WWE avoiding the issue entirely. It's like, oh, okay, this is based in our world. I am more in line. I'm believing what you're saying more now because I know you're not trying to weave a total fantasy.
Yeah, that's actually exactly the analogy I was just going to use. AEW, it's, I'm still behind on AEW comparatively, but it's like every time I watch AEW, I love the commentary because they'll acknowledge COVID. They'll acknowledge, time that two competitors might have spent in another company or, something like that. They'll even say that, that they'll acknowledge the fact that people have been world champions or they've had certain accolades in other companies, WWE included. So, I always like that. The WWE universe, they're in their own little bubble and all this stuff. And the real world doesn't really exist. It's kind of its own little thing. But I like when Wade Barrett said that tonight, mentioned that, Thatcher was part of RingConf, with the Imperium guys and all stuff. I was like, wow, that's cool. Like they're actually acknowledging this. Cause when we saw, and I forget who it was that Thatcher was talking to backstage and kind of seeing the background, I think it might've been Bartel actually. But a few weeks ago at this point, it didn't even occur to me. Like I had known about RingConf, but like they weren't anybody, they weren't a team that like I had really followed or anything like that. So it wasn't until like I think either you or Kelly brought it up on the show where it kind of clicked for me. So I do like the fact that they're bringing it up for people like that either, like me, kind of didn't put two and two together or, don't know about that history, to kind of, allow the people to know that there is a little bit more history there and the story is a little bit deeper than what they're actually telling us. So definitely like that. Definitely like that. Darrell, what else you got for us tonight?
Okay. Yeah, and, they've been mixing that in for a while that they had previously known each other with Tommaso talking about it with when I think that Bartel came up to Timothy Thatcher, all that. So Alexander Wolf walking by. So, yeah, they've been mentioning that, and for them to say it tonight, is to continue on to the story that they've been telling for the past few weeks with this crew and those two guys. So that's something else that was neat about it when they mentioned it. Now my second thing will be, okay, we've seen the match with Dakota Kai and Zoe Starks and stuff. I say this, they were continuing to try to build up Zoe Zoe by, you know, she loses to people who've been there a little bit longer, get the experience, and then be able to turn it around later on. Now, we also see this was a way for them to move into Io Shirai give Raquel Gonzalez the contract to sign. Now, I want to see how this goes. And they also came back with the backstage segment where they had Dakota Kai saying that they need to keep their get off that tag team loser streak, kind of hitting that they maybe both girls may be going up and could get another title match of the main roster tag team titles. How did you guys like all of this put together? And what night would this match be on? Because it don't seem like they're setting it up for night two. What night would this be on? And if it's not on night two, would that say a lot right there?
You know, I don't know. I think it really depends on how they set this up. This is kind of a new format for TakeOver. It's kind of almost like WrestleMania was last year. We'd never had a two-night event before for WrestleMania. So it was kind of a matter of them balancing the show so both nights felt important. I haven't personally seen any official, like, card or anything that says what's on what night. I don't know if one even exists yet. I'd have to want to know what, like, main event was on what night to take a stab at that. But, like, I think that this – and this might just be biased because I'm obviously heavily – you know, I love Dakota Kai. I love Raquel Gonzalez. I want to see them succeed. So this might be a little bit biased. But, I mean, I would like to see them, like, maybe – mid-main event on the second night or something like that. If they were to team up and face the, face whoever the current WWE Women's Champions are at that particular time. Actually, I'm talking about WrestleMania. You're talking about TakeOver. That would be TakeOver or WrestleMania if they were to get called up. So I could certainly see that if they were to do that. But, you know, as far as if that match just take place night one or night two I'm confusing the hell out of myself right now. You know what? I'm gonna go over to Tom to make sense of this while I figure out what the hell I was trying to say.
Well, I'm gonna bounce around a little bit in how I feel about things. It's probably another instance where I should go ahead and show some restraint, but the NXT has just been dreadful lately, so screw it. Right after I paid AEW a compliment, I'll just preface what I'm about to say by stating yet again that I think they're a total joke, and I just find their TV to be totally repellent. I can't stand them. It's a billionaire's toy box. But I hope that they book nothing against TakeOver. I hope that they promote just like it's a rerun of Dark, or it's just, you know, there isn't a Dark this week, we're doing Dark on Wednesday, and then NXT still loses the night. I'm only saying that out of spite. I just think that would be amusing on the final, on what sounds like it's going to be the final night of this quote-unquote Wednesday night war that NXT has. Even if not losing by numbers, NXT has lost it definitively by losing its own identity in the process. And it is just so aggravating that NXT transformed what it was to go up against AEW, and here we are. So I think that would be one final nail in the coffin. Like, they're already on the retreat. They're trying to have one last hurrah, and then they can't even pull it off. And it would be even better if AEW just doesn't even try to win. But anyway, all of that said, we switch over to talking about one of the best things on, probably the best thing on tonight's show in this Zoe Stark Dakota Kai match. I mean, Zoe Stark has, I've liked what I've seen from her so far, even if what I've seen from her has shown that she's still putting the pieces together. But, man, you get her in there with somebody like Dakota Kai on the other side, and this was a great showing. I thought this was extremely promising out of her. And, you know, like I said, she seemed like she was still putting the pieces together and that it might be wise to just keep her in squash matches. So then putting her in a relatively lengthy match against Io Shirai and then a relatively lengthy match against Dakota Kai seems like it's asking a lot. And they're probably going to move into a tag match between Raquel and Dakota versus Io and Zoe. But man, I just thought she looked excellent in there tonight, like right up to the level that everybody else has been performing at, which is a high level for this division. And that's on top of the excitement that I already have that they, like, the division is already packed. So my knee jerk would be like, oh, I want to be hesitant about imbuing new people. But we're also in a phase of NXT where at least I'm still adjusting to the fact that people are sticking around longer. It's not necessarily a brand that you move on from in a traditional sense like years past. So it gets me excited when somebody like Zoe Stark comes in, and we'll probably mention the other announcement that we got tonight in a similar regard. But then more specifically to Darrell's question, even though the champion challenging the challenger can often be weird, they don't go to it a lot, but they go to it enough. Rhea challenging Charlotte was odd last year, just for one example. I like this, that Io seemingly, like, without really saying it, it seems like she's kind of saying, like, all right, haven't gone one-on-one with you yet, and if I can't beat you, then I don't want to be champ, so let's do it. And I'm expecting, like, okay, they're going to do some post-match attack or whatever. But Io comes out, just beelines right for Raquel with the contract. Dakota tries to get in the way, and Io's just like, all right, I'm sidestepping you, and just takes care of business. I thought that that was really well done. And as far as what night to put it on, I mean, again, we still don't really know the logic of how they are presenting this. I think that you pretty much have to book the night evenly with the, I would want to say, the NXT championship match going on last on the second night, but who knows. So man, like, I would love to say Io and Raquel should main event night one on USA, but it seems more realistic that they would put Cole and O'Reilly in that position, and they'll probably have some stipulation or two attached to that match. And then Raquel and Io would go on halfway if we're thinking TV logistics. But they have enough big matches that they could do Walter Ciampa, assuming that's the direction, at the hour mark of the TV show, and then save women's championship for night two on Peacock. I mean, yeah, there are multiple ways you can go. I think there are arguments for multiple arrangements. I think so.
Yeah. So, and as far as the match goes, I got to agree with you here with Stark. She, when we first saw her, I forget, I can't remember, Valentina Feroz, maybe, I think it was, she was in the ring with.
Yeah.
And she seemed just really, I don't want to say clunky, but there were a few things that she did that kind of just, I guess, seemed a little bit clunky. And I can't point them out off the top of my head, but, like, I know that was my perception. I can even think of a spot where she was trying to turn Valentina Rose around, and, like, they both kind of awkwardly stood there staring at each other for a second before, like, they continued fighting. But I didn't notice any of that tonight. Now, Zoe seemed like she was much more smooth in the ring. She seemed much more comfortable in the ring. That might have something to do with who she was in the ring with. But I really liked what we saw to her tonight, even down to the attire. The attire is still relatively generic, but, you know, it had a little bit more pizzazz to it than her past couple of times she's been out there, where she just was wearing this very, very, very basic generic attire that really – brought up Valentina Feroz. She was wearing more flashy attire than Zoe Stark was, and Zoe Stark was the one that they were trying to, promote. So it was just a weird, like, thing on my eyes during that match. Like, I kept trying to focus on Valentina Feroz. Well, I was supposed to be focusing on Zoe. But yeah, I thought this is a great match. It went 12 minutes 34 seconds. I like the inclusion of Io Shirai. You're bringing out the contract for Raquel, all that. I agree with you. I think this probably is going to also go into a tag team match between Kai and Kai, Raquel, and Shirai and Stark. You probably next week, week after, whatever, coming up. As we get closer to TakeOver Stand Deliver, but. I think this definitely was the best thing on the show, in terms of match, in terms of angle, and all of that. I also liked the Ciampa match, but and that angle, everything is still a little bit, still not great. This I think was probably the best thing on the show by far. So, with that, Darrell, what else you got for us?
Okay, and talking about the women's division, as the women's division getting stronger and stronger. With I think they pronounce her name as Saray. I'm interested in seeing her coming in and what they do with her. The Japanese women that they get all the time over here, they find great ways to build each one of them up, and they all different, from Asuka to Kairi Sane to Io now, and now I want to see how they build her. And this and the promo package that they gave her was something totally different than what they did for any of the other three. So it's interesting to see, and how the rich starts getting richer with NXT Women's Division is amazing from top to bottom. And just speaking of Zoe Stark and how they built it her, and the profile videos they've been doing on her that people should go check out, the last two that they did on her on the YouTube page of the PC, was amazing also. So I'm really want to see, and me hoping this was how the main men's title scene has been so far and not has been so intriguing yet. I'm hoping that this serves as a reset, as Stand and Deliver be a reset for NXT, and they start using and building their whole NXT show around the women, since they have so many great women and a new title. And then until they can reconstruct the man's main event scene and go from there, but until then, build around the women and make it something totally different, because how many great women they have is totally awesome. And how would you guys like to see her come in, after TakeOver or before?
Yeah, so in a way, I wish Kelly was here tonight to talk about Sari, if I'm pronouncing it right. I'm really, really not super familiar with her myself. I don't know if Tom, if you are at all, but they seem to be giving her some fanfare here. I've seen some of the stuff on social media as well. It sounds like it could be could be something good for the division. It could be something that if she comes in after TakeOver, I am hoping that after TakeOver it is a bit of a reset for the company, for NXT, for a lot of reasons. The women's division, that roster is absolutely stacked. I think that they could probably do more with the women's division than they could with the men's. I think you're probably right. Having her come in and I don't know exactly where she would necessarily slot. Like I said, I don't know a whole heck of a lot about her at the moment. From at least what I'm seeing, with their build for her and their announcement of this, it seems like they've got something planned for her. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, it seems that way from the package, and it was really, I guess it was a surprise to see the package. It was more of a relief to see the package, since she got signed, I want to say, more than a year ago now, and it was the pandemic hitting that just put a stall on everything. And she is someone who, she's a Joshi Pro princess, but I do not know anything about her. I think we'd have to turn to Harley Padgett for that one in the PWG Talks NXT adjacent circles. It's extremely promising. You want to say, like, oh, it's so typical that they would say, like, oh, look at footage of Kairi and Asuka. And I don't remember whether they put Mako in there or not, but that's a pretty darn good track record. I'm not rolling my eyes at it too much. It's like, oh, if those are the people that they're comparing her to right off the bat, I am very optimistic. And I definitely noticed on Twitter after the video aired that Kairi Sane retweeted the video with like some heart emojis. Again, just like I said about Zoe, I'm optimistic about the new blood that's being focused on in NXT. Obviously, they aren't the only new female signings, but they're the ones who are being focused on right now, and I'm very optimistic there. And I just, I wish I could wholly spread that optimism over to what Darrell's talking about as far as a post takeover reset. I mean, with the rumored switch to Tuesdays, which seems, you know, seems to be more and more of a sure thing, the more news leaks out about it, like the our calendars are clear after WrestleMania week and, you know, what that whole thing. It seems like, okay, if you're not directly going up against someone else, I mean, I guess they would be going up against Impact at that point. But, if they're not directly going up against TNT, then hopefully that allows them to focus on themselves a bit more and maybe prove me wrong with women's tag team championships that I look at and I just go, you know, like I said last week, it seems like, okay, this is just a different way to contextualize who is on the cusp of singles title contention. But I also worry that it could become an excuse to keep ceilings on people, whether I like it or not. Like Shotzi Blackheart, I kind of feel like this is where she tops out. That's you know, how she's being presented right now is pretty much toward the top of what I feel personally Shotzi Blackheart should be how she should be presented. But then I look at Ember and I'm like, man, I hope they don't just say, because that's kind of what the not that this is the topic at hand, but that's kind of how the interview was framed from Ember's side. Like, yeah, I came back to NXT to be a champion and here I am. And I'm like, that's not what you meant though. And I hope this isn't now an excuse to not elevate her if she, if it seems like that would be the right thing to do booking wise, if we get back to that point. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, Darrell, what else you got for us?
Mm-hmm. And just to say this, when NXT moves to Tuesday, they have to go ahead and admit that they moved because they were losing and no longer wanted and no longer could see themselves continuing to lose, because as of this moment right now, NBC no longer owns any rights to hockey, so they have nothing to put on those Wednesday nights at this moment right now, because the main rights of hockey was bought by ESPN, which they announced Wednesday of last week. So when they move to that has to be them admitting, them and USA, because they no longer own any rights to hockey. So right. That's a nice little note to put out there. And
sure,
going to my next question is they started the strange, because they have a match with the Irish Ace tomorrow, where he has to defend his title. I guess they already given away the answer to that. But they had Jordan Devlin come out there and confront Escobar, and they got their words off. You've seen a little blood shed and things of the sort like this. So they're starting to build to that. They had Devlin coming out there, not like a baby face, but maybe just a badass, trying to be a badass tweener or something like that. How did you guys like that? I know, Tom, you have your quotes on Jordan Devlin. I did at first too, and what happened with what came out during the summer. I understand that as well. And you know, originally to me, he was always a Finn Balor clone, especially when they show him in the Cruiserweight Classic when he first made his debut. But as he started to get into the Irish Ace and he showed that he can cut a promo and things of the sort, he has started to get better and start to weigh out that character that he's portraying. So other than that, how did you like the interaction of those two guys, and what do you guys think about all of that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess touching on I guess, like, the just quickly on the, you know, allegations over the summer and things, like, you know, we've talked about it a million times. It's kind of why I want to touch on it just quickly to start is, like, yeah, I just wish the company was more transparent with what went down and what happened, you know, like, I mean, like AEW was with Sammy Guevara and things like that, because I want to know who I'm backing. I think Tom actually said that the last week, week before. I want to know who I'm cheering for, you know, and what they stand for and things like that. So that is also in the back of my head too, you know, because it's like, I don't necessarily want to start cheering for somebody that, you know, I may not want to, you know, that might have some different morals, things like that than I do. But since, you know, they aren't transparent and they are giving us you know, Jordan Devlin right now, you know, I guess I'll go with what they're giving me. You know, in terms of Devlin himself, I agree with you. I think he was, like, every time I saw him, he definitely reminded me of Finn Balor. I don't know if the words Finn Balor clone ever went through my head, but now that you say it, like, sure, I hear you. I do like this kind of, you know, new character. It was, you know, we were talking about it last week where, you know, he is, you know, he's kind of a de facto heel on the NXT UK brand. He was a heel in NXT before leaving, or, you know, before the pandemic and the travel ban and all that. You know, and tonight they had him cheered as he came out. You know, I'm assuming that was piped in cheering. At least sounded like it anyway. Yeah, so he was cheered when he came out. You know, they kind of seem to have him positioned almost as a bit of a tweener leaning face here. Yeah, but I thought it was cool that they, you know, said, I think it was Escobar that said, finish your business and come back and, you know, face me or something like that. You know, acknowledging the fact that he is, you know, still doing some stuff on NXT UK, you know, with that title. This is one of these things that, you know, I've been waiting for since it happened. You know, since, you know, Escobar won this title, we knew that there was going to be a showdown between Devlin and somebody else. We didn't necessarily know who, you know, if you know, Escobar would still be the NXT Cruiserweight champion, you know, come this point, you know, but he is. I'm a little bit concerned because you've got a heel going up against a heel, and I don't want to see them, you know, I don't want to see them turn Devlin too much and, you kind of kill any momentum you might have on the NXT UK brand with this heel character. You know, similar to what they did with Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez, where they kind of just flipped them face for like a week. Yeah, I don't want to necessarily see them do that. So that's really my only concern. I think the match, once we actually see it, is going to be probably going to be a good match, probably going to be a fun match to watch. You know, super explosive, energetic, pretty much everything you'd expect out of a cruiserweight title match. It's up in the air for me who's actually going to walk out victorious. There's part of me, you know, I could make a case for Devlin where, you know, he never lost the title, and yeah, Escobar did have a pretty lengthy reign. So, you know, I could see, you know, Devlin kind of, you know, reclaiming his gold. I could see them leaving it on Escobar because Escobar has been a relatively strong champion, a little bit less so recently, but, you know, as we've talked about, but that's, you know, a lot of that had to do with stuff with, you know, that he got into a Karrion Kross and a non-title angle and all that. Yeah, I definitely be interested in seeing it. So if Escobar did, you know, retain, I could definitely see them doing that. The other thing that I could see them doing too is coming to some sort of a non-finish where neither man wins, both of them are still an NXT Cruiserweight champion, and then maybe something like Johnny Saint and William Regal decide, okay, why don't we take these two titles and separate them, and then one of them becomes a UK title, one of them becomes, not that I want to add another title, we just added another title last week, but yeah, this is something that I know has been floating around, you know, making its rounds in the rumor mill and all that, you know, and it's something that I've been thinking of as well, is like they could do that, you know, and separate it into two separate titles. So I don't know, we'll see, but I am definitely looking forward to it once it happens. Before I go over to Tom, I'm going to roll in the Phantasma versus Breezango match here right before Devlin came out. So we did have Yeah, we had a match. Like I said, it was Legado del Fantasma versus Breezango. Went 9 minutes, 51 seconds, which was, in my opinion, just kind of a standard, traditional TV tag match. Nothing spectacular, nothing terrible either. It really just kind of served as, in my opinion, served as kind of a backdrop for Devlin to come out and challenge Escobar afterwards, you know, and just kind of filled some time with Breezango and Legado del Fantasma here. Phantasma did get the win. I think that needed – so they got the win to essentially raise the stable up, you know, kind of put a little bit more stock in the stable going into this feud with Jordan Devlin. But it raised the stable up and in turn raised Santos Escobar up. But I don't necessarily feel like it did anything for Mendoza and Wild, even though they did win. What did they win? They didn't really win anything. They won the match, but the storyline advancement here isn't them. It's their leader. They're not any step closer to the NXT tag team titles. So just, I don't know, for me, this whole match felt strange and weird. And I don't know if this was another, you know, deviation because the COVID outbreak or whatever, this whole show just seemed like disjointed to me. But anyway, before I keep blabbing on about this, Tom, what did you think about the match and Devlin Escobar?
Yeah, the match was whatever, and that's the extent of what I think about it. It's weird how WWE keeps doing these brief little face runs for people that we're supposed to boo, like Raquel and Dakota. And yeah, sure, it seems like Dakota and Raquel may be on the rocks soon because they had a backstage segment where they talked about being a team, and it's like, oh boy, they're referencing being a team. That means they might not be a team soon. But then, you know, on the grander scale, they do that with Bobby Lashley, and they make people, including myself, thrilled that, I mean, if you said this a year ago, it would have seemed impossible, but they get people to a point where we are thrilled that Bobby Lashley has won the WWE Championship, and now we're supposed to turn around and boo him the next week and boo him at WrestleMania against Drew McIntyre. It's just a weird circumstance. So, you know, they're fiddling around with that a lot. And here we are with Devlin. And, unfortunately, I mean, yeah, it's a tough one for me to evaluate on the basis of just like, oh, how should they book it? And, oh, well, at least the match will be technically sound or whatever. You know, for the reasons you guys were talking about, and there's no real, because there are other people, there are people that wrestled on, or somebody who wrestled on the show tonight that's in a similar situation, and I don't bring it up every single time we talk about him. So there's no real right way to say this, so I could be getting myself in hot water. But when people... God, there's really no right way to say it. But like when you look at what the allegations were and you look specifically at what Devlin's were, see, the reason there's no right way to say it is because then I'm suggesting that we should be comparing allegations and saying whose is worse when they're all just different levels of wrong and bad and shouldn't have happened and should be punished. And if they were punished, then we need to have known about it so we can finally stop talking about this and or at least if not stop talking about it, that's the wrong way to phrase it, but move on understanding one way or the other how it was dealt with and whether it's something that they discovered there was no evidence behind the allegations after a sufficient investigation, whether the punishment fit it and we can look at it as a redemption story from here on out, if not like an inspiring one, at least like, okay, they've got to earn back being on our good sides, which, you know, people can be redeemed. I strongly believe that. But we don't know what side of it we're on. And when you look at the different allegations, again, this is the part that you just can't, there's no right way to say it. But when you look at what Devlin was accused of, it's like, okay, they fired Gentleman Jack, they fired Ligero, and this guy's still on staff. I know they've put a little bit more investment into him, just like they put more investment into Velveteen Dream. But it's just like there's an unevenness in how these things have been approached. And Devlin, unfortunately, is much, much, much closer on the side of like, I just, you know, based on what I read and saw corroborated and this and that, he's just not a guy that I am interested in investing in one way or the other. So all that said, and I guess we'll have to end up just like we do with Velveteen Dream. You know, we'll have to end up regurgitating that in various forms as they continue to present them to us. I do agree that business-wise and NXT UK does still, even with some bleed over here, does still feel very, very separate from the rest of WWE. I do think that the way to get out of this is to have some situation with a non-finish where Devlin goes back to UK and becomes whatever they call that championship now. That he's now the first heritage champion or whatever. I don't know. That's what they call the cup. I don't know what. But yeah, just their version of the North American champion now. So that just seems like the way to go with it, since it, you know, they're clearly not taking Devlin off TV.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I'm thinking. Not necessarily. And when I was talking about, you know, having it become a title over there, I meant it. I don't think I said it, but I meant it as more of a North American title level title rather than, you know, a weight restricted cruiserweight title. I think that that would probably be the better way to go. But Darrell, what else do you have for us? If not, we'll move on.
Okay, last thing, and also, they have their version of North American title is with the Heritage Cup title, however they do it. That's their secondary title that they've been using to defend as a title with the Pacific type of rounds, and because it's a different title in their own, because you have to defend it doing 5 rounds and scoring points and stuff like that. So that's what they've been using as a sort right there. So.
Okay.
That will bring
a
third
title. I saw a defense of it advertised at one point. A-Kid, right? I think is the one. I saw a defense of it promoted, and I thought that it was just like a storyline thing. But that's interesting. The rounds, the idea of the rounds matches does interest me, and as I always have to preface, I guess, disclaim when I say these things. It's like I say that, and then I don't actually turn around and make much time for the show. But yeah.
Yeah, been defended like a few times, and they building up a story with it. So, yeah, so that'll be the third male single title over there. So that'll be a little bit too many titles, especially for an hour-long show. So hopefully they don't. They just have somebody win and merge both of them together and call it as one. But last thing, and hopefully I want to see how they continue to build Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. I want to see this be built up into the biggest thing. I hope that whatever comes next week, this stipulation, and they can main event night 2 of TakeOver with this stipulation, because I feel like right now this is the biggest thing that they have. This is the biggest thing that they can come with, and you can know that this will stand and deliver on that night. So hopefully they build this to be the main event. I understand you want titles to main event shows, but I feel like this could be built to be the biggest thing that they have and should have. So hopefully that this is built into the main event. How did you guys like the interaction tonight with Kyle on the screen, then later on with the so-called running off the road type of thing and all of that police involved? How do you guys like about this? And do you guys see my idea as being too much, or could it be the best thing for them right now?
All right. Yeah. Cool. No, thank you very much for that, Darrell. I guess before we touch on that, let me go into what we're actually talking about here. So we had a segment tonight where Adam Cole came out to the ring to kind of essentially call out Kyle O'Reilly for costing him the title match last week. Kyle O'Reilly showed up on the screen, essentially, William Regal, actually, before Kyle O'Reilly came out, William Regal came out and said, yeah, he's not in the building tonight. He's not cleared to wrestle. His neck's busted up after last week and all that. He's not going to be here. Kyle O'Reilly kind of interrupted William Regal and appeared on screen, not necessarily the Titantron screen above the ramp, but actually where the audience is shown that are not actually logged into the Thunderdome site that are apparently just replayed from other places. But, you know, that's where he showed up. To talk to Adam Cole, and essentially challenge him, to a match, you kind of run each other down. I don't remember exactly word for word what was said, but that essentially moved into a little bit later on in the night. There was a segment outside the arena where it looked like Kyle O'Reilly tried to run Adam Cole off the road. I'll be completely honest with you. During this segment, I was so infatuated with the fact that the police cars had neon green lights. I don't remember exactly what happened in this segment. I actually even asked Tom, like, hey, you guys have green lights down there, your police cars? Base kind of just talking about that. And then shortly thereafter, William Regal was shown walking, I'm assuming, from the scene of that accident back to the arena. I think it was Mackenzie Mitchell stopped him, basically asked, what he thought was going on. And he said that both Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly must show up at the building next week. If not, they're going to destroy each other. So bring them into one location so they can destroy each other on TV and make money for you or something. That is his goal. He said he'll have a solution for them next week. So to kind of touch on what Darrell was talking about here, I think this definitely has the capability to be probably the biggest thing at TakeOver. I agree. You probably want your titles in the main event spots, but I think the Undisputed Era, like I was talking about earlier tonight, where Ciampa's kind of above the titles, like the Undisputed Era, we've been waiting for this breakup for so long. It's a storyline that I think is beyond titles. It might be even more intriguing than title matches. Even if the title matches were like, and the angles going into the men and women's title matches were phenomenal. I think this could be something that they could build up to be in a main event spot. I don't know if it will. I wouldn't be surprised if it was, but I don't know if it necessarily will. I did like the interaction tonight. I think Adam Cole might have seemed a little bit too fired up for me. It almost came across like a forced type of a fire up, but that's again really more of a nitpick than anything. I did like the uniqueness of the angle outside. Because we didn't necessarily see anything happen. It was just like, hey, this is what happened. We're cutting to this, the scene of this crime here, whatever. We didn't actually show what happened, just kind of show the aftermath, which I like, because you don't always, in real life, there's not a camera recording everything that happens, So I thought that was kind of just a cool, like more of a realistic touch. Tom, what do you think of everything going on here and what Darrell said and all that good fun stuff?
So it's probably far too often that I say, well, in my notes I wrote, rather than just using my notes as reference and then speaking. But this was like five or six, maybe four or five segments across the whole show tonight, which I like it when they spread out storylines like that.
Yeah.
But every single one of, every time it popped up and I gave it a new header, like, okay, now I'm talking about this, my note is just, okay. Like, Cole promo. Okay. William Regal interview. Okay.
Yeah.
The arrest. Okay. And I agree with Darrell also that this probably is the biggest thing that they have on the show right now. I think it is. It's the biggest angle they have, but it doesn't feel as hot as it should for – finally the Undisputed Era broke up and the two, most promising guys from it are feuding right now. And part of that probably is that we don't have a fully fleshed out idea of who Kyle O'Reilly is, especially now that he's showing up dressed differently now. And I mean, that's a superficial thing, but it's a trick that wrestlers go to a lot, is just, changing up the look a little bit when they shift their character a little bit. And, Kyle, wearing the same, black vest and everything lately grown out his beard more. It's like, well, wait, this doesn't feel like the same Kyle O'Reilly. What's different? I feel like there's something different that I need to know that I don't know yet. So there is something a little bit alien about that, as superficial as it may be. I'm just thinking in the language of a wrestling show, the signals that we go by. I'm just hoping that they can salvage it, because this feels, you know, like I was laying out earlier and mulling it over as I was saying it, like, yeah, they could arrange this different ways, but it seems like the realistic, you know, end situation that the men's top title will main event the Peacock show, and then this grudge match will be big enough that it will main event the first night on USA of TakeOver. But they're going to have to heat it up more to raise the excitement level to the obligatory level that it is already going to be at anyway, if that makes sense. Like, it's already in that main event slot. It doesn't need to get there from where they're going to pencil it in. But as far as how excited I am for it, they've got a lot more work to do. And I guess we'll see what they do next week when William Regal presents his solution, which I figure is going to be some kind of stipulation either for the match and or like whoever wins gets this, or whoever loses has to do this, or, you know, I don't want to go as far as to predict loser leaves town, mostly because that's not an original thought. I saw Joel Pearl tweeting about it, but, you know, he mentioned it, and then I'm like, ooh, that might be good. But anyway, credit to him there. I give him a lot of credit on the show, but there you go, Joel. I think that about covers that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I'm definitely intrigued, and I guess hooked is probably not the word I'm looking for, but it's going to be the word I'm using. I'm hooked by the story. It doesn't excite me as much as I wish that it did, and I kind of wish that the whole Undisputed Era breakup, would have once we got here. And I don't know, maybe that's because, you know, Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish are a little bit absent. They have been, I mean, obviously Fish is out with an injury, and you know, Roddy, he's been absent, you know, I think this week and maybe last week, if I'm not mistaken, you know, in this. But even when he does show up, he's kind of just playing this, like, buffoon type of a character, doesn't know who to side with. I don't know. I feel like they could have probably done it a little bit better for the magnitude of the breakup here. I mean, this is essentially, you know, like DX breaking up, you know, or something like that. This is a big faction breakup, and I feel like I should be more excited for the match between Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly than I am. Don't get me wrong, I'm excited about it, I'm looking forward to it, but it's not one of these, like, oh, I can't wait, you know, that I've gotten in the past with some different TakeOver matches. So, heck, even TV matches for that matter. So, we'll see what happens there. Actually, before I move on to another match, I'm going to read an email from Kevin Catani, because we started talking about Devlin, and he also brought up Dream, and we brought up Dream at one point too. So let me read this, and we'll tackle this at the moment here. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. With Jordan Devlin back, I feel like we might be on the verge of additional crossover as travel restrictions get eased. And we also saw that, and this is me adding this, but we saw that also too with Walter tonight. Kevin goes, that said, who is one male and one female NXT UK superstar that will be next across the pond? Also, and I only ask this because he's been conspicuous by his absence, where is Velveteen Dream? Haven't heard anything about official release, and with the two-night takeover on the horizon, it seems to be a time when they bring him back. What do you all think? Thanks, as always, and the office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. I'm going to start with Dream. I haven't personally heard a thing about Velveteen Dream since we saw him on TV last. I haven't gone out of my way either to kind of look into what's going on with him, you know, where he's been or whatever, but I kind of have a feeling they're keeping him off TV because of the allegations and things like that. That's, again, speculation. That's just what I'm thinking. I could be completely wrong. But,
Yeah, that's at least my thought, especially where you've got a lot of, you know, you get a lot of different outlets like us that kind of keep talking about it every time he comes out. You know, I know, you know, like I said, we talked about it. I know, you know, Wade's talked about it. There's other media outlets that I've seen that and I've read that talk about it any time that Velveteen Dream's out. So it's like, I don't know if they're keeping him off TV just to kind of see if things maybe die down. They can bring him back at some point and people forget about his past or what. Because he's definitely somebody that's been floating around myself, you know, floating around my brain myself. We're trying to figure out if Karrion Kross was going to be the next challenger for the NXT title a couple weeks ago. And Dream was somebody I brought up because, like, he's a main eventer, but he's not around. Like, you know, kind of it almost seemed like they might end up bringing Dream back. Or it seemed like a possibility that they could bring Dream back to feud with Balor if they wanted to do that, and move Kross up to the main roster. But obviously it wasn't the way that they went. It's kind of what was going through my head. Whether or not they bring him back, that's a good question. I'm personally hoping not, for a lot of the same reasons we're talking about with Devlin earlier, but that's kind of just with me. With who they might bring over from across the pond, I'd need to think about it a little bit. Kaylee Ray is somebody that I would love to see come over here. As far as one of the guys, I'm trying to think. Walter's the first one that comes to mind. He obviously showed up tonight. Mustache Mountain's always fun. But, yeah, I don't know. Tom, I'll think about that, and you hit the rest of it.
I wish I had seen that part of the question when the email came in, because – I guess I just have to go with my knee-jerk, Tyler Bates kind of been there, done that over here, hasn't he? But Tyler Bates is so damn good.
I know, I'd love to see him back over here.
And they can, you know, it's been there, done that, but they could do something different with him.
It's been a while. It's been well over a year at this point.
I'm pretty sure they're the tag champs now. I know they are, but I even though they're mixed up with Eddie Dennis and I don't care for him, I really like Pretty Deadly. Could be fun. And they've done some stuff. I don't know if it's been on TV, but off TV, they've done some stuff with Isla Dawn. But man, it's tough to pick between, like, you've got Aoife Valkyrie. If Darrell was on, he could maybe correct me as to what she's actually up to. But I think that they've kind of cycled through the most important stuff that they were going to do with Piper Niven. And I've thought that she was great since the first Mae Young Classic. So,
oh God, yeah.
So maybe bring her over. I think I'll say Piper Niven and Pretty Deadly. As far as the other thing, unfortunately, most of it's, you know, was stated when we were discussing it earlier. I'll reiterate that I believe that, I've always strongly believed that, there's a certain level of hell, but you know, for the other, for like 99.9% of us, no one is beyond redemption, but you have to want that redemption. You have to understand why you need it and you have to seek it out. Unlike someone like Hulk Hogan, who has had multiple opportunities to, you know, ask for it and show that he has grown, and he instead just keeps on digging his hole deeper and deeper. To do something with Velveteen Dream, I feel like that redemption tour kind of thing would need to be, it would be a necessity first, absolutely. And that transparency that we keep saying over and over and over again, that transparency is a necessity. But last I heard about it was, I think, the last that anybody heard about it when Triple H was asked about it yet again on the most recent conference call, and he just said, he just went to his usual, like I said before, we've covered it, there are no updates, he's training with us, and that's that. So,
that's pretty much what I thought too. So, you know, we'll see if we see Patrick Clark in our future or not. So let's see, what else do we got tonight? Let's go to the we'll go to the debuting match of the former Eli Drake, L.A. Knight. He faced August Gray tonight in a pretty quick squash match here, 2 minutes 23 seconds. Although there was a point during the match where Bronson Reed made a quick appearance on the ramp. He had, I want to call him Eli Drake, he had L.A. Knight's blue
leather jacket that he's been wearing the past few weeks. Tonight he had more of a red theme going on, but he had a blue jacket the past few weeks. Bronson Reed appeared with that, and very reminiscent of a Chris Farley movie. He put the jacket on, except he actually rips the jacket. Chris Farley, I don't believe, did, if I'm remembering correctly.
Richard.
But yeah, so he ripped the jacket, which was a little bit of a distraction. August Gray tried to go for a roll-up pin, but wasn't able to overcome him. So, which I really did not think was going to happen, but hey, I've seen weirder happen. Leon Ruff. So yeah, LA Knight went over August Gray in 2:23. I like what I saw here tonight out of Eli Drake, LA Knight. I'm going to probably do that for a few weeks. I think, and we've talked about this before too, I think his primary bread and butter is going to be on the mic. He's really good on the mic, super charismatic. His delivery, everything he says he says with confidence and swagger, and not a manufactured confidence and swagger either. It doesn't appear to be. It feels like he is really kind of believing this character. I dig it. As far as his in-ring work, I mean, he's I think we compared him to The Miz a couple times here on the show, and definitely, I think, is a great comparison. He's not going to be I don't think he's going to be a super technical ring general, down the line here. But I think he's certainly going to be a great addition to the roster. Between the presentation, the music, his entrance, and all of that, they're clearly building him to be somebody here within NXT. I have a feeling that he might end up kind of, and this is again just speculation, but I think he might end up having a little run. If not actually winning the North American title, maybe going for the North American title before going up to the main event. But I can certainly see him in the main event NXT scene. They definitely need more people there now. So somebody, I think, with the charisma of LA Knight, as well as the ring work of LA Knight, I think could certainly fit into a much needed main event slot. What do you think, Tom?
Yes. And Farley definitely ripped that jacket. Chekhov's gun, you gotta, if you put a jacket in the movie, Chris Farley has to rip it.
Yes.
No, I of course you can't.
That's right, he did rip it.
That. Yeah. And incidentally, Chris Farley looked a lot like Fatty Arbuckle too. But anyhow.
I gotta Google this guy.
now I wanna wait. I'll talk about this, but I definitely
yeah, a little bit.
Okay, right.
I can see it. Yeah.
Maybe you need to see him in action, but little bit of Walter in there. He was a very, very physical comedian, of that Keystone era. That was the way.
He shared a birthday with The Undertaker just many, many years ago. And the only reason I know that is because The Undertaker's birthday is the day before mine.
So LA Knight, thank goodness for this guy's promos. Here is somebody on this dearth that is modern NXT that thankfully has a good women's division. Here is somebody who is actually, when he speaks, trying to reach through the camera and grab the audience. And he is actively trying to invest me in his weekly pursuits. He is trying to make me care about every single thing that he does. Ciampa wrestled a match on the show tonight. Tommaso Ciampa, one of the best wrestlers on contract with WWE, under contract rather, and I said, it seemed like kind of like a throwaway thing, like they just threw it on the show. This is crazy world. So, LA Knight, Eli Drake, he's actually trying to make me care about a just over 2 minute long match against August Gray, and he succeeded. So yeah. It's a new character, so he has that going for him as well. But, I mean, this is a put-my-phone-down guy. I see LA Knight on my screen. I hear, once I get used to it, I'll hear LA Knight's music, and I want to put my phone down because he has succeeded in investing me in what he's doing, which is way more than I can say for just about everybody else on the entire damn show right now. So if he's Miz-level, fine. As long as he's not Nia Jax, and as long as he's not pick anybody, just about anybody you want from AEW who can't even run the ropes properly, then great. Fantastic. Give me more of that. Put the championship on him. Oh, and I'm not going to pretend to know enough about this guy previously, even though he was, you know, hiding in plain sight on NWA, to go as far as to say that he was using this finisher before. But doing 8 years back every week, I think it's amusing that this is also the Kruger's End finisher that Leo Kruger was using for a while. I guess you'd call it a face buster, but I don't really know. Like a stunner where you don't fall to your ass.
Yep. Yeah. No. You know, actually, it's funny because I could have swore there was somebody else in NXT that used that before, and that was definitely it. I'm really high on Knight. I agree. You put your phone down, type of a guy. The fact that he even, and, you know, obviously he's wearing sunglasses a lot when he's talking, but you can tell he's looking into the camera, and that's one thing that WWE doesn't like. They don't like it when you cut a promo into the camera for whatever reason. It's never made sense to me as to why, because you look at somebody like The Rock. The Rock would grab the mic, and he'd look directly in the camera, and he'd talk to you. He'd cut the promo to you, not to, you know, some guy standing off in the corner, but to you. And that was something that resonated with me, and I didn't even think it registered that, hey, he's looking at me at the time. You know, I was a kid.
Used to be much more standard in wrestling that you would talk straight into the camera.
Absolutely. You know, you go into, you know, well before the Attitude Era, things like that, NWA, WCW, AWA, you'd look directly into the camera. You wouldn't be staring off into oblivion. But that's what we get with, like, 99.9% of the promos and stuff like that with the majority of the roster. So you get a guy like LA Knight that has that charisma, and kind of like that, you know, I brought up The Rock, you know, he's got that, I wouldn't say quite that same level of charisma as The Rock, but he's got a decent level of charisma. He looks directly into the camera. He talks to you, and it's different. I really, really dig it. I really like it. And I'm hoping that, you know, we do see some good things out of him. I think he'll be a great addition to, you know, the main event once he gets up there. So,
you know,
definitely,
who also used to act directly into the camera a lot, Fatty Arbuckle.
And it just keeps coming round and round and round again, just like Fatty Arbuckle. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. we should just keep that rolling next week when presumably Kelly's back on with us. I mean, what the hell are you?
What
guys
are you guys
talking
about? Oh man. Right. Let's see what else we got on the show here. So we got one more match that we haven't talked about yet, and that is Dexter Lumis versus Austin Theory. That went 9 minutes and 31 seconds. I didn't write it down. Who won? It was Dexter Lumis that won.
Yeah,
it was Dexter Lumis the one. I wrote everything else down. I didn't write that one down. I started second guessing myself. So anyway, this was an interesting one because conspicuously absent was The Way. Now, whether or not they were part of this COVID thing or not is kind of up in the air, I guess, is all speculation. But I'm kind of surprised that they weren't actually there to be there for Austin Theory. Theory and Lumis, you know, a month or so ago where Lumis kidnapped Theory, and now they're kind of trying to spin it that Lumis was just trying to do the right thing and take Theory away from the torment and torture of The Way and all this stuff. And they're trying to paint Dexter Lumis as the good guy here and Austin Theory is the bad guy. And Austin Theory is the one that got kidnapped and is suffering from like a Stockholm syndrome thing. And all this stuff. It was just such a weird portrayal of these two characters, and you hear commentary trying to make sense of Dexter Lumis kidnapping somebody against their will, and he was just trying to do the I forget how they worded it, but I wrote down the hits and misses. I'm like, intent is, you know, if he was trying to just be nice, that's one thing, but just because he intended on being nice and trying to do the right thing doesn't mean he did the right thing and there shouldn't be consequences for it. And this, that, the other thing, it was weird. It was really strange the way that they kind of portrayed this thing, this whole angle, the way they've been doing this for weeks now. in a way, I'm glad that The Way wasn't on TV. We've kind of talked about how they've jumped the shark a little bit, and we've kind of seen almost a little bit too much of them. So I'm glad that they kind of weren't on TV tonight. We were shown that it was like a FaceTime call or something like that on a tablet. Where he was talking to Austin, they were talking to Austin Theory, kind of giving him some motivation before the match. But other than that, we didn't have really any other involvement from The Way, other than a really strange and weird DQ commercial where they broke character to talk about their life and how fun and crazy they are, how much they love food.
Food is so important to us, so we go to Dairy Queen.
Yeah, like, come on. Like, of course, you guys eat at Dairy Queen, and when you do eat at Dairy Queen, I'm sure you go for the fried food, not the ice cream. Anyway, Theory, Loomis. Before I throw over to you, we have an email here. Let me open my phone back up. So we have an email here from, and I am going to do my best to pronounce it. I even asked Kelly to help me out before we started tonight. So we get an email tonight from Hiten Dave. Hello, gentlemen. My question tonight is, do you think Johnny Gargano is genuinely into the skits they're currently having him do, or is it just NXT management thinking this form of outrageous fiction draws better ratings? When I get around to listening to tonight's episode, I aim to make it a drinking game. Every time Tom Stoup says, COVID Wrestling Center, take a swig. I'll never have enough of that line. Tom, I think you got to get on it. I don't know if I've heard that tonight.
yeah, I would have given Heaton a laugh there if I hadn't read it ahead of time. I didn't want to force it. But, yeah, I kept him sober tonight, but boy, am I thinking it. You know what? My son was watching the first part of this episode with me, and he goes, Daddy, why are there people there? Because, he sees the Raws and the SmackDowns too. And he's like, why are there people there? And then some of them are on screens. And I just said, because WWE's doing a bad job.
I hope did he accept that answer?
Yeah, he understands. He's six, but he understands enough about going on with COVID that he understands.
Cool. Yeah, it's funny because this is completely off topic, but I've wondered. That's something I've wondered about, like kids, is just if they can grasp what's going on in the world right now. Like, I don't really have any friends or anything that have kids around that age.
It probably depends from kid to kid, and of course, then how the parent is framing it as well. But I've been as crazy as it can get. Now going on over a year of doing this, I could be a lot worse off. My children are very patient with this. I mean, when we're able to, I don't need to get too detailed. We are being extremely safe, but when we are able to do something outside of the apartment that's recreational, you can tell that they're just like so relieved. And of course, we're looking forward to when we really feel like it is safe to go back out. But they do understand everything, and I'm just what I keep saying is that I'm trying to create a circumstance where we can get past this. And every time we reflect on it or every time we're asked about it, we don't have to have that one moment or those couple of moments in the back of our mind that we feel like we have to hide. Just everything that we did that wasn't completely sanitized or quarantined or whatever was out of necessity for getting by in our daily lives, and everything else was, was safe. Yeah, I guess that's just my long way of saying that I'm impressed with my young children for understanding all of this, even though during virtual school, the very few times that it does come up explicitly, my son is the guy who unmutes himself and goes, it's because of Donald Trump, and the teacher just has to be like, all right, we're moving on now.
That's fantastic. Anyway, that's great. That kind of just threw me off. Anyway, So as far as Gargano liking the skits and things like that, I've got to say yes. I got to think that Gargano is probably – I think Gargano and LeRae probably have more input into these skits than most of the talent have into their their skits. I could be wrong, could be completely wrong, but I think Gargano has you kind of enough pull backstage, and he's been there long enough. He's enough of a veteran. They trust him enough to kind of have a little bit of input into this. Cause I can see, you like you think about this as what, maybe 5 years ago at this point, 4 years ago, however long it was, where Gargano and Ciampa, they were backstage doing the glorious bombs, you know, with Bobby Roode's music and things like that, just kind of showing up with, behind Bobby Roode playing his music. It had nothing to do with canon WWE. It was just stupid social media stuff they put out to be funny. So I feel like this is right up his humor alley, all of this stuff. And like I keep saying, you know, I've said this on the show many times, I love stupid humor. I absolutely love just blatant stupid humor. My friends and I, it's how we've been for 20 years. So I've genuinely liked the way up until a couple weeks ago, you know, where I kind of felt like it was during that, that therapy segment where I feel like they kind of really jumped the shark. But I think Gargano has direct involvement with this. If not, I don't think he's got full involvement with it, but I think he's got a lot of say with this. And I gotta think he's having fun with it because he probably has the say with it. He's working directly with his wife, you know, and he's working with a couple, you know, couple great young talents that I'm sure are really happy to be in the position they are to be learning from some veterans like Gargano and LeRae. So I would think that Gargano is probably pretty happy with where he's at right now. What about you, Tom?
I agree with you. The impression that I've gotten from this is that this is, if not Gargano's brainchild, at least that he's very much involved. He and LeRae probably are very much involved in this. And for all I know, they handpicked Theory and Indy. I mean, you're like, maybe it doesn't go quite that far, but I wouldn't be surprised if we learned that. And boy, blast from the past, I totally forgot about those glorious bombs. When you said it, I was like, oh my gosh, why does that ring a bell? But yeah, I would suspect that Gargano is behind a lot of this, if you know, if not writing every single word himself. Oh right, I knew there was something else. Loomis versus Theory.
Yeah, match.
You know, back to. You know, after talking about comedy segments that I think even Fatty Arbuckle would look at and be like, yeah, that's pretty stupid. You know, go back to grump mode because the Loomis versus Theory, you've got these two wrestlers who neither of whom felt worthwhile. How do I want to phrase it? Neither of them were at a point where they felt worth spending 9.5 minutes of TV time plus entrances plus a little backstage vignette beforehand on before this match. And this match didn't do anything to justify it, I don't think. I mean, I guess we got that little moment at the end where, I mean, if I have to think about it, I would say I suppose that Loomis helping Theory up before finishing him off is going to make Theory think or make Theory realize like, oh, Gargano must have really set up that therapist. And then who knows? I don't know. Like it's, on one hand, I'm one of the voices on this podcast who should be analyzing this, whether I like it or not and be objective about it. But on the other hand, this storyline is just such trash. I the less time that it spends in my mind, the better.
Yeah, I agree, and I hate saying that because I've really liked the way up until this point, but this whole Dexter Loomis thing, and this even really goes back to when he was feuding with Undisputed Era, and he kidnapped Roderick Strong because they were trying to portray Roderick Strong's a bad guy and Dexter Loomis is a good guy. And he's the one that did this kidnapping and this, that, the other thing. And you know, he's just all creepy and showing up in random places. And I mean, it's really hard to get behind Dexter Loomis as a face, hard to actually be sympathetic with him because he just portrays such a stoic Dexter-like character, like, you know, from the show Dexter. It's just kind of hard for me to think of him as a face. So the whole thing has just been backwards for me. I still like the way even though they've jumped the shark and I think that they, I'm not really digging what they're doing right now. I still like the stable and I don't think the stable has necessarily run its course, but it will if they keep this direction. And I think it will sooner rather than later. So, I kind of agree with you there. Let's see. There were two other segments that we haven't touched on yet. I don't really think there's a whole heck of a lot to say about them. I know I really don't have much to say about them. So we had Shotzi and Ember backstage. You're being interviewed by, I believe it was Mackenzie Mitchell, kind of congratulating them on their NXT title win. We had Leah, Jessica Maia show up, and you kind of they were kind of bad-mouthing them. This was before I realized that I was going to be hosting the show tonight, so I didn't actually take super notes on this particular segment. But, hey, they had an interaction backstage. And then a little bit later on, we had a video package with Xia Li, first speaking in Chinese, and then basically saying that I forget exactly what she said, but you know, basically kind of a generic thing, you know, that she's kind of a force to be reckoned with. Nothing super over the top out of either one of them, as far as I'm concerned. Anything that you want to touch on with those, Tom?
Already bled over to Ember and Shotzi earlier. I'll just add that they were both, and normally I would just say this about Shotzi, but the two of them together were really irritating, and I hate to say that about Ember, and I don't think I've even ever said that about Shotzi before, but together they were just really, really irritating here, swapping catchphrases back and forth and talking each other up after their title win. I thought it was extremely annoying. I didn't write anything. I mean, the Xia Li thing was a blink and miss it thing. I don't have anything on that. And I'm going to do this after having privately said to you in Skype chat, like, we don't have to hit all of these backstage things. A lot of them were really insignificant. But I will mention that the Grizzled Young Veterans video was
the thing.
That's an easy fix. But they were basically just saying, like, hey, we still exist. And then they did the Cameron Grimes Instagram thing, which I only want to mention, well, not just because it's Cameron Grimes and we love him, but...
You know what? I thought this was the second week in a row we didn't get Cameron Grimes. I completely missed that.
Good for you, because if you remember, and good for you if you don't, if you remember when Corporate Kane went on vacation and they showed pictures of his vacation and it was just Kane sloppily photoshopped on, like, the lighting doesn't even match, sloppily photoshopped into, situations that it's just so blatant that he's not actually in those places. It's so bad that even by WWE Photoshop segment standards, you almost wonder if the following week it's going to turn out to have been a lie. And it's like Daniel Bryan sees, I think it was an angle involving Daniel Bryan. It usually was with Corporate Kane. Is going to be like, oh, well, I know you weren't actually on vacation or whatever. So these were so bad that even though I don't think this is where they're going to go, and I don't think they're going to move away from this phase of his character this quickly, it almost has me wondering if once Cameron Grimes is back after whatever he's dealing with, I'm not going to cast aspersions. I've done that plenty tonight. It's been a particularly grumpy night for me. But, It has me wondering if we're going to find him like eating out of an empty soup can behind the PC, and he's going to be like, I paid my last cent to have somebody Photoshop those for me, so you guys would think I was still living large, but I actually lost it all, or whatever. But it was bad.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't feel so bad for missing that. The Grizzled Young Vets. I didn't write that down, but that the audio was out of sync for that. I thought that there was something actually wrong with my I use YouTube TV. I thought there's something wrong with like my browser, so I actually refreshed the page in the middle of that because I thought something was off. I think with that brings us to the end of our show. So I am Nate Lindberg. I am your interim host for the night. Kelly, our typical host, should be back next week, I think. Pretty sure he should be back next week. But like I said, I'm Nate Lindberg. You follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. If you want to write into this show, it's PWTorchNXT@gmail.com, or you can call us next week, 515-605-9345. I do the hits and misses for NXT, and I also do the Alt Perspective SmackDown reports on Friday night, so check both of those out. I'll have the hits and misses up on the site tomorrow, probably tomorrow mid-morning. Tom, who are you?
Even after saying it for years and years, that email address is impossible not to stumble over. So,
I know.
Yeah, every single time. At Tom Staup on Twitter is where you can send the hate tweets after I crapped all over everything tonight. Everything that's not LA Knight, because apparently he's my new favorite thing that's not Zoe Stark. But yeah, I will also say that Kelly and I don't know right now what the future of NXT 8 years back is, because they just suddenly dropped on us, I think a week ago now, that or like 8 or 9 days ago now, very, very short notice, that not everything that's on the WWE Network is going to immediately make it over to Peacock. And, you know, some of that, it's understandable from a logistics and a business standpoint, I think. I can definitely argue for it in those regards. But unless we get pleasantly surprised and the NXT archives actually are there, in the meantime, we're banking as many episodes as we can. I can't promise that it's going to be a wealth of them, but we are doing more. We're putting them together ahead of time more than we usually do. And we are committed to seeing through the retrospective. So we will see, but there is a new episode this week. There'll definitely be a new episode next week. And the WWE Network, I guess, shuts down on April 4th. So yeah, go VIP to hear what we have for you there. We're definitely going to keep on putting stuff up as we can. And even if we get completely shut out of watching these shows, we want to figure something out.
All right. Yeah, no, I'm curious. You know, it's funny, actually, that you said, I forgot they shutting down on the you just a couple weeks, because I got charged full price for WWE Network just today. They took full price.
Yeah, they sent out that email like, that was the last time we were going to do it. But, you know, FYI.
Yeah, right? Gotta love that. Gotta love that. All right, guys. So that is our show, and we will see you next week. Take care, everybody.